Coming up, we're going to talk to Tim Stafford, his brand new album, Guitar Melodies, is a killer for me. I think Tim's guitar playing is on par with any that I've ever heard across many, many different genres. We're going to start the program off with Margaret Falls from that album. Then we're going to talk to Tim about all the stuff that he gets into when he makes an album. It's a lot. There's a lot there. Tim has a lot going on and writes from a very deep personal point of view. And boy, what a great player. Thanks so much, Tim, for providing this music, Margaret Falls. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a new cut from a new album by my guest today, Tim Stafford. What you just heard was Margaret Falls, which is the first cut on his brand new album, Guitar Melodies, which is on Hedge Drive Records. And I have on the phone a frequent guest on Unreal Bluegrass, for which I'm very fortunate and happy. Our guest today is Tim Stafford. How have you been, Tim?
I've been fine, Steve, and I feel fortunate every time I get the chance to be on Unreal Bluegrass. It's one of my favorite shows, and I love it.
Thanks. I appreciate that very much. So you released this Guitar Melodies, which, by the way, you dedicate to the memory and legacy of Tony Rice, which I thought was nice. And we've talked about this before, but you wrote what I consider to be the definitive book on Tony's playing. It might be a good opportunity just to refresh people's memories on that as we get more into the album.
Yeah, it's called Still Inside, the Tony Rice Story, and I started it in 2000, and I talked to Tony about doing a biography, and he said, yeah, I really want you to do it. And I worked on it for 5 years and got a co-writer in 2005, and we finished it in 2010. And it's been out since then, and it's still in print. A lot of people say, oh, it's out of print.
Yeah.
What it says in Amazon, no, it's not.
Uh-huh.
You go to my website, timstaffordguitar.com, and you can get it from there.
Okay.
And it's not $350 like it is on Amazon, too. There's a lot of people scalping the thing. So.
$350, man.
I know, man, and it's just kind of crazy. And, you know, if it was a signed copy by Tony, I could kind of see it.
I would probably do that.
Yeah, because there aren't very many of those.
No.
You know, there's a limited number. But, you know, a lot of them are not signed copies that they're trying to sell for that price. But anyway, it was a labor of love. You know, I mean, I just really was such a huge fan of Tony's and cognizant of how much he had literally changed bluegrass history and the sound of the music, and just by his playing, especially his rhythm playing, you know,
his rhythm playing.
And
yeah.
So definitely wanted to try to write his story, and it's still out there.
Good. I'm glad to have the opportunity to mention that. We talked about it at length years ago, but this album made me think of it again. And I thought, well, you know, let people know that it's available, and that to me, it's the definitive. It's the one. It's the one to get to learn about Tony, and I think Tony's playing too. So his rhythm guitar was well, I mean, it's just ridiculously good. But I think his chords and his choice of notes, I think, when I listen to something like even Sunny from your last album or from this brand new album, Guitar Melodies, I hear changes that make me think there could be an influence from Tony's jazzy, bluesy kind of feel, which he just popped into so easily. And I'm not trying to say you're imitating him, but I don't know how you avoid it. I mean, if I play a banjo and I'm ready to play a banjo, you're going to hear Earl Scruggs, I hope. He may deny it. I hope you can hear something of Scruggs. I'm not trying to copy him because God knows I couldn't. But I got to think that must be in you all the time as a guitar player.
Oh, it is. And I think there's hardly any players in bluegrass today who can claim that he's not in there. You know, I mean, he's in everybody. He's foundational. And I think really through him, Clarence Watt, too, is in all of
them. Yeah, well, I think Clarence may have kicked open the door or at least lifted the window, and I think then Tony barged through and just took what Clarence was doing and made, this is all my surmise, but I think made the lead guitar in bluegrass a real lead instrument in the sense that we assume it is now. I mean, I don't think it really was back in those days.
I think you're right. A lot of people that I knew at that time in the 70s when I was really had heard Tony for the first time, and they wanted to copy Tony, and some of them were amazingly good at it. You know, our banjo player, Jason Burleson, can play it just about as close to Tony as I've ever heard. And there's a bunch of other great players like Richard Bennett and others who who were so captured by that sound, you know, and I was too, but I just couldn't play it. I was like Tony with Clarence. He said, all I ever wanted to do was play like Clarence. Why would I couldn't do it? And I said, well, that's kind of like I was with you, man, because, you know, I really never really learned a ton of Tony's leads, but it's kind of like him when he would talk to me about jazz. He never sat down and tried to learn a jazz break.
No.
You know, he never learned any breaks from any jazz players, but he listened to it so much that it seeped into his playing.
Yeah, I think.
And that's the way with Tony with me. It's like, man, you cannot help but be influenced by that powerful sound, that lead or rhythm.
It's so great that you're able to and then retranslate or feel it and play it out. And you do. Tim, you're one of the best guitar players I know of. So the tune that we were going to talk about this album, we'll make sure we talk about its release, all the people on the album. You have a special guest on the very last tune, Tranquil Tides. We'll get to that as we'll talk about most of the tunes on the album. We did open the show today with Margaret Falls, which I think has most of the people that are on the album with you, with Jacob Burleson, well, you mentioned Jason, that's his son, and Ronnie Stewart, who I think there's a contract, there's probably a union rule that Ronnie can't play more than two instruments per album, because it breaks some kind of union rule, I think.
I think he has to play at least two, though.
At least two, but not more than. He can play any.
Right.
First time I saw him was with Lynn Morris, and God, I loved her. I love her so much, and that band was such a great band with Jason and everybody there. And
yeah,
so Ronnie comes out, and about that time he was all of a sudden, boom, rocketed to the top, and everybody knew who Ronnie. I went to see Lynn and the band, but I loved. So, and there's instruments just fanned on the floor in front of him. Everything is in front of him so he could pick it up. I mean, guitar, fiddle, mandolin, banjo, and whatever else he could find. And just whatever they needed to pick him up is what he did. So that's
as good as it gets on anything, you know. He's one of those guys. But,
well, that's what JD thought.
And truly, his banjo and fiddle playing, man, I mean, he's the guy. And you call one guy and you get two of the best musicians that you could get anywhere, you know. And I've had Stuart Duncan on several of my records. And, you know, when I can get him, if he's available, I'll try. But Ron, it comes down, and he does the banjo part. Then he lays that down, and then he picks up the fiddle and just gives you some of the best fiddle tone that you've ever heard in your life, you know.
I'm always glad to see his name on an album credit. And all the reasons you're saying. So I think he pops. It's got to be him at least twice on Margaret Falls, which is what we just played. Is that a fair
statement? Yeah, it's fiddle and banjo. Yeah, he played both on there.
That's one of the many tunes on this album that you've written. There's a couple of tunes we'll talk about. There's some things that are traditional that you arranged, but everything else I think you wrote, including Margaret Falls. And I don't know much about Margaret Falls. You can talk about the tune a little bit. The audience has heard it, but we'll hit on that one.
The tune I actually had before I named it. You know, that's the way that sort of works. I have a lot of these tunes, and I don't have names for them. So, but I have some kind of code name for it, like Descending Waterfall Song or something like that. And actually, I did.
That's if you wanted to go to Windham Hill. I don't know if they still exist, but if you wanted to do.
I'm not going to call it that.
Okay.
But I have it in my notes, you know, actually, it did kind of sound like a waterfall to me, and it had that flowing sort of feel to it.
Okay.
That's like that song that I did with Blue Highway called Horseshoe Bend. Sort of sounded like a being on a lake, you know, and that's what Horseshoe Bend was, a place out on Boone Lake. But Margaret Falls is a falls that's about 4 miles from my house here. It's just over the hill here in the Cherokee National Forest where I live now in Greenville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful spot, man. Everybody around here hikes up to that. It's a great hike, and been there a few times, and so I immediately thought of that waterfall when I thought of this tune because of the waterfall sound of the melody. So that's how that came about.
Okay. You do. I'm going to get these traditional tunes that you've rearranged. I'm going to bump on those real quick, like Banish Misfortune. But I'm going to back up to Cluck Old Hen because I've not heard that version before. And when I hear Cluck Old Hen, I'm talking to Tim Stafford about guitar melodies if you're just tuning in. That you do that at like First of all, it doesn't sound like what I'm used to hearing, maybe say on a banjo-driven version of it, but you started out and it's like, aren't there three different tempos that just slightly nudge one into the other by the time of the end of the song?
Yeah, it gets a little faster every time. Starts off kind of slow, sort of like a chicken waking up.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, he's scratching around all over the yard, you know, but it never gets frantic.
No, it's more
old-timey, you know, and that's the old-timey version of the tune that I was wanting to capture. I tuned the guitar down to open C9, and then Ron played the fiddle and the banjo on it, and he definitely wanted to get that old-time flavor to it. The version of the tune that most people know is the one I actually played on it too, the Ron Block's version of it on Every Time You Say Goodbye.
Yeah, sure, back. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and that was Ron's version of Ralph Stanley's version of the tune. So it was a little different than the Cluck Old Hen that I knew. Actually, I'd heard it before that, heard an old time fiddle player playing it. So this is more like that version of it. It's more the old timing.
It is, and I don't want people to think, yeah, it's really going to bust off in the third version. It just increases a little bit each time through, and it's never, like you say, at a frantic pace. And by the way, as I listen to it at this pace, and maybe it's the first time I've heard an old version, I almost start hearing again Clinch Mountain, which I never really heard before in anybody else's playing. I almost get that sense. And maybe that's just that mountain type of feel in the older version, but I was sitting here thinking, I could almost hear that as Clinch Mountain back.
Backstep, yeah.
A little bit.
I mean, it's got that feel to it. I think part of that was Ralph grew up in these mountains, and he absorbed that feel even when he wrote a tune like Clinch Mountain Backstep.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The other tune on here that I have is traditional. You and I talked a little bit about Banish Misfortune, which is the 10th cut. There's 15 cuts, and this is one that you did an arrangement of, which I had told you off the air. I've never really heard a guitar approach to this before, and you and I isolated why. I'm from the Cincinnati area, and there was a guy here who released an album under that title and played hammer dulcimer, and his name was Malcolm Douglas. I don't want to not give him credit for it, but that's where I heard it back in the 70s, and I've only heard it since then in that style, and I really like what you've done putting that onto a guitar sound. Never heard it done like this before.
Oh, thanks, yeah. Well, it's actually at a C position, which is unusual. I wanted it for the tone that I could get on the guitar in that version, in that key position. But you're right. I always heard it as a fiddle tune, Irish fiddle tune.
Yeah.
And then I did hear that Malcolm Douglas record, and there was a great hammered dulcimer, actually multi-instrumentalist, who played up here in Southwest Virginia, who's from Wisconsin originally, John McCutcheon.
Yeah.
John's actually a great talent, man. He's a great writer, great singer, great. He's just an all-around great performer, but he lived up here and played at the Carter Fold a lot in Hilton's, Virginia, and I got to see him there several times. He played fiddle and guitar and mandolin and mainly hammered dulcimer. His hammered dulcimer playing just opened my eyes, and I believe he played Banished Misfortune too at that point. So, yeah, I mean, it's got a different tonality on the guitar than it does on hammered dulcimer, but I was really trying to go for that fiddle sound a little bit on it. And Jacob, I knew he'd just be able to jump right into it. You know, it's the cool thing about these young players, man. It's like in bluegrass, they can play anything. They can play jazz, they can play blues, they can play rock, pop, anything that you want. You know, they can play it. And so we've always talked about bluegrass is a great training ground for musicians, you know. But boy, I really see it in these young players now.
Yeah, just like I agree with you 100%. I'll head back up to Gray Fox here in a few weeks, and I think a lot of it comes out of the Northeast. Not all of it, but I just think there's this thriving community where all these young players, and maybe they come out of Berkeley, maybe they're just attracted by the Berkeley feel of what's going on, but they've got chops out to whatever, and they can play everything.
Some of them, a lot of them do come from Berkeley.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Skipping down here, the very last tune, let's list again if I didn't. You mentioned Jacob Burleson, Ronnie Stewart. I don't know Carmen Keller.
No, Cameron Keller.
Cameron Keller.
He's the bass player for the Lonesome River Band. We just played with him this weekend. He's a great bass player, and actually he lives just down the road from me. He's less than 3 or 4 miles from me down the valley, but I knew he would be available too, and because he's just close to the studio also. And it was fortuitous, man, because he's one of those powerful bass players. I love his playing. He's really, really good.
Yeah, and I always like to make sure we get all the people on the album mentioned. And then you have a cellist playing, Dave Egger. I would pronounce his name as
Egger. Dave Egger, yeah. Dave is one of the most amazing musicians I've ever seen, man. He was a child prodigy. You know, when he was growing up, he was a star piano pupil. He's actually the only pupil of who's the great American composer?
Copeland?
Aaron Copeland. Oh. He was Aaron Copeland's only student. And when he was, he was the youngest person ever admitted to Juilliard.
Oh, jeez.
And, you know, he's one of these guys that he's played everywhere in the world with just about everybody you can imagine. He's been a regular part of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. He's played with Evanescence.
Boy, that's a stretch.
He's done albums with Robert Redford. And yeah. It's just crazy. And he lives in Bristol, Virginia now. He moved down here when he was playing on a Ralph Stanley record. And just fell in love with the culture and the people here, and so I've gotten to do a lot of stuff with him over the last several years. I'm really, really grateful for that, because he can play anything, and he's just a phenomenal musician. So
let's take the opportunity then talk about Tranquil Tides, which is where he really plugs in. It's the 15th cut on this album, Guitar Melodies. Absolutely beautiful tune and great title. And I love the cello when it's worked into something like that. So why don't we hit on Tranquil Tide just a bit, and we're going to bounce around a little bit more, and I'm going to have you introduce Joni Mitchell tune for us.
Okay.
So on Tranquil Tides, you just mentioned Dave Egger. That's another song that you wrote. Gorgeous, mm-hmm. gorgeous tune. So, go ahead.
I appreciate it. I mean, one of those tunes that you write on a day where you're kind of relaxed, you know, and that I wanted that feel to come through on it. And the melody is kind of simple. It's two part, and it does have a little minor part that is a counterpose to the rest of the melody. But the main melody is just sort of relaxed, you know, and I was fooling around with one of these small capos that is only big enough to capo 3 of the string. So I left the bottom string open, played it out of A, and I had like a G sound there on that bottom string. So it just had this ringing bottom note, and that allowed me to do these other things with it. So it kind of came out with fooling around with that position one day, that capo. And but then... when I took it in the studio, I was like, well, I'm going to record this, and then I'm going to have Dave come back later and do his part. And he did, and yeah, I knew he would just absolutely capture it. You know, he's one of these guys that knows exactly what it needs, what the team needs. And, knocked it out of the park.
Good cello player. Does they just have that haunting, even when they come in for the first time, it's just something about it. Maybe I don't see enough of them to know. But, I mean, I always hear that sense kind of like you just get pulled up into the air with that real solid bassy feel. And does a great job on that. I mean, I don't know how to describe it, except it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's the last cut. It looks like you do a lot. Now I'm thinking you got a lot of water songs on here, Tim. Margaret Falls, Tranquil Tides. I don't know how to pronounce Hecate Strait. I know that's a body of water. I'm not saying you wrote it about
Hecate Strait. Yeah, it's out in off the coast of British Columbia.
Yeah,
we passed through there when I was on an Alaskan cruise one time. We played an Alaskan cruise, and it was one of the stormy areas there where the open Pacific opens up and goes straight to the shore. So it's a deep water area, and it's pretty stormy and choppy, and so it's kind of a minor key worried sort of song.
But, I did look that up because I figured it was a real place. I looked it up. So when you play in Alaskan tour, are you outside? Do they let you stay inside?
No, it was a cruise. It was one of those inner passage cruises.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
Yeah, we did it a few years ago. It was a lot of fun. But
yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, there are water songs on this record. I never thought about that. Either water or chickens. I've got one called Rhode Island Red.
That's right.
And then Chuck O'Hen.
That's right. That's right. Farm animals and bodies of water. That could be the subtitle of Guitar Melodies. I just happened to notice that looking down there too, and you got a little bit of wind in there with Sirocco at the end. But
that's true.
So lots of weather things and a lot of great solos. I try to have notes everywhere you solo something, which is just always fun to listen to. I play Sunny from your last album all the time. I just think that's I could play that anywhere. When I had a jazz show, I could have played that and nobody would have known that it wasn't. Joe Passer, one of my other favorite guitar players.
I would have known it was not.
Well, you would have, but you wouldn't have been listening late at midnight on a Wednesday. So I don't think so. So anyway, yeah, I did a lot of solos, a lot of great stuff. But let me ask you to do this to introduce a tune that most everybody knows from Joni Mitchell. There's a couple you cover. Joni Mitchell, you also do George Harrison, While My Guitar Gently Bleeds, which we're going to play in the first part of the program. But for now, can you just do a short intro into Both Sides Now?
Yeah, Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now is just such a masterpiece song. The lyrics are incredible. And I definitely think about the lyrics when I'm soloing. I think that's a really important thing to do. Because it's not just a melody. It's a beautiful melody, obviously. But the lyrics are just incredible. And I try to look at that a little bit in the way that I approach the melody to the song. So that's, you know, it's one of those tunes that's going to always be around, and I just wanted to offer up my version of it.
Well, I'm going to play that now for the audience, Both Sides Now, from Tim Stafford's brand-new Guitar Melodies. We're going to play that as Tim described it, and I'll come right back and have some more chat with Tim as soon as we're finished. But we'll hit on some other things on this album, maybe introduce another song. There it is, Both Sides Now from Guitar Melodies.
Unreal Bluegrass, coming to you from the Gold Tone Music Group studio.
I love that tune, Tim, Both Sides Now. I love the way you do it. There's so many tunes out there that can be adapted and easily into your style, and I think also then into bluegrass music, because it's not totally foreign that music or pop, we'll say pop music, gets worked in. I mean, so much of what we think now reverently as the good old stuff was stuff that, you know, people heard on the radio and they made a bluegrass. Fox on the Run, I always say that's the ultimate example of something that was a rock hit from Man for Man. I believe Bill Emerson said he heard it on the radio and taped it. Now it's like a absolute standard. So, I mean, there's so many pop tunes out there that can be adapted in easily, and I think this is one of them that, boy, should have been done, has been done, and thank goodness.
I appreciate that. I remember hearing Gary, I think it was Randy Scruggs, did a version of this on the Will the Circle Be Unbroken album.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But he did a finger style, and he did it a different tonality of it. He did it up high, mostly, you know. And I always liked that version, but the first time I heard this tune was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. I heard Judy Collins do it. I always thought she, for the longest time when I was young, I thought she wrote it. Well, it was Joni's tune, but the tune that sticks in my head is Judy's version of it.
Judy Collins' version is what I heard first, because it was a big hit.
Yeah.
And she sang it so beautifully, you know. And, of course, I heard Joni's version later, but, God, that song just blew me away from the start. One of those you have to listen to over and over again.
And you do need to, as Joni had great tunes and great melodies, but you do need to listen to the words of it as people are, if they listen to it or imagine the words as you're listening to Tim's version here on, I just have beautiful written all over it on the brand new, Hedge Drive Records, is that a label that we know or is that your label?
That's my label.
Okay.
I've done the last four records that I've done, I think, solo things on that record, and yeah, it's just Hedge Drive was where my grandmother lived over here in Bloomingdale, Tennessee.
I think you've told me that before now that you mentioned that, and I probably forgot. Hey, listen, you've mentioned guitars and tunings and what, and I also know you make note in the liner notes of what guitars you're playing. Can you give us an idea. I want people to know what they're hearing as far as what the artist has chose to play, not necessarily every cut that you've chosen for, but tell us what the guitars you're playing on this album, if you can.
Sure. The majority of the tunes I'm playing are a 1934 D18 that I've had for, nearly 20 years. And that's my main guitar, and I just love that guitar. There's been a few copies made of that guitar, and Rufus Thames made one, and he's actually making one for our festival, Blue Highway Fest, in October down in Big Stone Gap, and they're going to raffle it away.
Oh, cool.
As a benefit for the IBMA Foundation.
Oh, great.
So, it's got a huge neck on it, and it's a beautiful sounding guitar, and it's really hard to replicate those guitars. There weren't very many of them made because that was the first year they were listed in the catalog as D18s, was 34. So.
Oh, okay.
And it's, just with that big, big neck, man, I think that contributes to the tone of it. And but I also played a authentic D18 Authentic Martin, 37 model D18 Authentic from 2007 that I have. It's a Sunburst. It's a really good guitar, too, so I used it. And I also use a Gary Cotton guitar. He made a signature model guitar for me for a while. And I used that on some of the ones I had to tune to open C, like Heckett Straight. And then I used that on a few other tunes, too. So I didn't really use – I only used those three guitars.
Okay.
On other records like acoustic guitar, I used four or five different guitars, but I didn't use any of the Gibson guitars that I've got on this record, so it's mainly those three.
I have no idea who Randy Cotton is, except for you just mentioned him, and maybe I don't pay attention.
Gary Cotton. Yeah. He's a builder down in Eastern Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also noticed on some of the notes twice reference to a Bobby Starnes, and I know that I spoke with you when you had an album with Bobby Starnes. The title was What We Leave Behind, and I'd ask you off the air, is that the same Bobby Starnes? He's doing some design work and also some engineering, I think, in the studio is what I read. That's the same Bobby Starnes that we had a nice discussion about What We Leave Behind, and I guessed that was it, and asked you off the air, and it was. It's nice that he's involved in this I guess it's just something you guys are friends.
Well, yeah, we went to high school together.
That's right.
And Bobby and I have written, I don't know, a couple hundred, 300 songs together. I mean, we've written together. I've written with him more than any other writer, I think, that I've done co-writing with. And then, we're just good friends, too. We decided to do this duet record of some of our songs, and He actually has a studio. It's where Blue Highways recorded their last four records.
Okay.
I've done all mine at his place. And he's had a studio over two different houses. And his most recent one is, he calls it Hat Creek Studios. And that's near Jonesboro, Tennessee.
Okay.
Beautiful house, beautiful location. And Bobby's also, he started out, had a business for 40 years as a graphic artist.
That's right. That's what I remember now. Yeah, I remember looking him up at the time, and that all comes together again after a while. Yeah,
right. He had a company called Electric Graphics, mm-hmm. he and Johnny Burton, and they illustrated college textbooks. Almost all the textbooks that came out, they illustrated or laid them out or both.
Oh, cool. All right.
Good
to see a familiar name. When I look through these things, I like to see, I think I know who that is or don't. And then I'll ask you about it. That's part of the risk of coming on here. You got to know who's on your album.
Yeah,
who's in the studio and whatever, because I'm just curious. I don't know. I figure the only thing I can do is learn from talking to people like you, and then we can shed some light on the new music. Talking to Tim Stafford, the brand new album, Guitar Melodies, which is on Hedge Drive Records, you just heard, music-wise, you just heard before we came back to talk, Both Sides Now. You also covered George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which I don't know how you could be a guitar player, and it's a solo. I don't know how you could be a guitar player and not want to play that song at some point.
Yeah, well, I'm just such a huge Beatles fan, man. I've got twin sisters who are 12 years older than me, And in 1964, when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan's show, they were 16. So you can imagine.
Right in the wheelhouse. They were right in the wheelhouse of it. Man, oh, man.
So I went through the whole Beatles phenomenon with them. I was only, I guess I was 3 or 4 when they were on the Ed Sullivan show. So, you know, I went all the way through that. Had no choice, but I absolutely love the music anyway. So that had a big impact on me. I think I still think in terms of melody and chord structure and stuff like some of those Beatles songs, you know. And that song just, I don't know what it is, that it always was one of the most beautiful Beatles songs to me. And I wanted, at first, I was going to try to learn Clapton's guitar break to it and try to play that, overdub that over my other thing, but I thought that might not work on the acoustic as well, so I just thought I'd just make it a solo.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's great. I don't know. You know, I think the Beatles, you know, rock and roll existed before them right at the beginning, but they changed. You talked about chords and melodies. I think what happened after their first exposure is that all of a sudden the melodies and the chords they were choosing really start fitting into what I consider, you know, the genius of Paul McCartney and John Lennon, and then later George also. But it was like all of a sudden the pop music and the rock music changed away from what would be, I don't say simpler, because it wasn't simple, but they started changing everything, and I think everybody felt compelled to kind of, let's do what they're doing or try to do what they're doing. I think the songs became more interesting, more complex. That's just my worthless editorial, but that's what I remember.
No, I think you're right. I think they changed it forever, you know. It's never been the same, and those songs, man, they just keep going on. I heard a musicologist say that 300 years from now, we'll probably still be listening to those songs, but by that point, they'll be folk songs.
That's right.
I don't know about that. I don't know if that's true, but that's the way the folk process works.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of songs right now we call traditional that somebody wrote.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They were cutting edge. They were cutting edge. Speaking of edges, how about that? Hedge Drive Records, and you have Down the Edge Path. One of the tens on here. There's a smooth. I don't even plan to do that. There's a smooth one with, and also I'm looking at Kingfisher Creek. That's another body of water. Tim, I let that one slip by. Talk a little bit about some of those. I have a big star by Slow Loris because it's a relatively short tune, but it's another solo, and I just really like the thing. But let's hit on some of the other things, and I'm gonna have you come back and introduce Old Forge after we work our way back up the line.
Okay. Well, Down the Edge Path was a melody, the first part of it, that I had that I intended to make into a vocal tune because I really liked the melody and thought it was evocative of the lyric. But then when I started putting this record together, I thought, well, that would make a good follow-in to two other tunes that I had that I kind of joined to that, and that's why, actually, I think this tune has 4 parts, but you listen to it, they're all in the same key, which is G minor, and they all sort of, they flow together, I think, out of that original melody, which is slow and mournful.
Okay, I'm gonna go back and listen for those changes. I didn't pick that up right away, but I'll go back and check that out.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that's sort of a compilation melody. I've done that in the past. I did it with a song called Tideline that was on my acoustic guitar record, and that was like 3 different melodies I joined together to make one.
Okay.
And that I had already had these melodies before, they just seemed to work better together than they would separately, so that's why I ended up doing that.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's... you know, I tend to do that a lot. It's just, you have all these tunes, and it's like, you don't want to do little short versions of some of these tunes. You'd rather just go ahead and put them together if they work. If they don't work, I mean, you're not going to force them together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But I felt like these did, so.
It's funny, you mentioned Beatles and combining tunes. Just recently had a nice conversation with Alison Brown where she takes Here Comes the Sun and a tune from Antonio Carlos Jobim, and they just blend it's you can't even notice unless you know the difference in the tunes. And just like she hears that, you hear what you're describing in your own music and fit them together. I don't get that. I don't understand how musicians can fit those things together so well, but that's why I'm not one. But it's a great tune. There are two songs on here that are kind of short, Slow Loris and I want to say, what is Lawndale the other one?
Lawndale, yeah. Well, Lawndale's just kind of a straight sort of blues in a D position.
Right.
And Slow Loris is an open C tune that I had, and they're both fingerpick tunes. So I love to fingerpick. I'm not great at it, but I love it so much that I have a bunch of tunes because I'll sit around and these tunes will come out, you know, while I'm trying to work on some things, and I'll record them and I'll have them and I end up playing them a lot, stuff like Scirocco, you know.
Yeah.
I wish I had Tommy Emmanuel pinch hit for me on Scirocco. He would have.
He probably would. He would probably join you.
I really like the tune, yeah. And all I'm saying, it didn't turn out okay, but I'm more of a flat picker, but Slow Loris had that feel to it. Seemed like it fit that open C real well, and was able to do it as a solo piece.
You know, here's the thing too, and I haven't yet asked you about the lineup or why you did these things, but I think it's developing as we go. But I think you do have a couple of nice short guitar. I think that's great. I don't know if I don't want to say they serve the purpose to cleanse your palate. That's not it at all, because they're great pieces of music. But you have some. Like you
well,
just mentioned,
that is kind of the way I look at
okay.
it. It's a palate cleanser, okay. Sort of a way to get from one place to another,
yeah.
Transition.
Yeah,
you
okay.
know?
And they happen to be great tunes too. I love the bluesy feel of Lawndale, and Slow Loris is just one of those. It's just a beautiful, for a minute and a half or so, or a minute or a half around that. It's just a gorgeous piece of solo playing by Tim, and I just really enjoy that in Scirocco. I'm not going to keep you all day, but I want you to go back and speak a little bit, and maybe now you can talk about Rhode Island Red and Old Forge, and we're going to have you introduce Old Forge. So let's hit on Rhode Island Red, another tune that you wrote. All but four tunes, I think you wrote on the album. Yeah, and we've talked about the both sides now, and we hit a little on While My Guitar Gently Weeps and two other traditional things that you rearranged, but this is yet another Rhode Island Red, which is another tune that Tim put on the album, Guitar Melodies. Why don't you talk about that? Well, then we'll have you introduce Old Forge, and I'll let you get back to your busy day.
No problem, man. Well, Rhode Island Red is actually it's a collection of three tunes that work together in kind of ragtime format. It's sort of a ragtime feel.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing that I wanted to get across with this, was that all of those melodies felt to me like a ragtime sort of thing. So the B part, which I go into fairly quickly in the song, has got more improv in it. And I'm sure if I did it live, it'd be a lot different than what's on the record. But it's still got that sort of ragtime feel to it. And when I finished the song and was able to put them all together, trying to think of a name for it, and I was thinking, what does this sound like? It sounds kind of like a big old chicken pecking around out in the yard. And so I called it Rhode Island Red, which is one of my favorite chickens.
I don't have a favorite chicken, but I'll work on it. For the next time I see you, I'll say, Tim, I found my favorite chicken. And I don't know, I'll just make one up. It might be one in the freezer. It might be one in the cooler part of the Kroger's. You know, that would work. That might be my favorite.
The one I'm having for dinner.
That's right. And then I want you to, if you've just tuned in, you've missed some wonderful music and chat with Tim Stafford, who just always provides interesting things. And I wind up drawing them out because I want to know the answers to things. But Guitar Melodies on Hedge Drive Records, I really enjoy. I was so glad when you came out with a guitar album, more or less. So glad to see that pop, because I do like the work that you do. And of course, everybody knows Tim's with Blue Highway. Still busy with them. Does these projects in addition to that. And just so glad that you do so many, I don't call them side projects because I don't know what that means, but there's so many things that you keep creating that aren't necessarily in that band format or sound of Blue Highway, which has its own great history and sound. But I was so glad when this came out. As soon as I saw it, I thought, I got to talk to Tim about this Guitar Melodies. It's just a wonderful collection.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm glad you did. I really am.
Yeah. Well, so let's do an intro to Old Forge, and then I think I'm just about wore you out on these songs. So let's do that one, then we'll play Old Forge for the audience, and also in the same time I'll say goodbye to you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Old Forge is another melody that I had recorded when I thought I was playing around here. A lot of times what I'll do at the house is I'll have structured practice sessions where I do sit and practice with usually a drum track from YouTube, and I'll practice with a bunch of different ones and different styles, like jazz drumming. My favorite's the funk drummers, and that funky style, man, that really it changes the way you play.
I would have never dreamed, not that I would say it's impossible, but I would never dreamed you were sitting around sort of noodling and playing, listening to a funk beat. I mean, it just didn't occur to me.
Yeah, I do, and you can also, it really stretches your playing and makes you think about playing in time, and if you do it enough, you get to the point where you can play in time without thinking about it, and then you can concentrate on other things like tone.
Okay.
And that's, to me, that's where it's all at, you know, so try to get that. You get the timing first, and you try to get the tone and the feel and everything else in there. But this is one of those tunes that I had recorded, and I think I probably was watching TV or something, playing guitar. And when I do that, I'm not really watching TV, and I'm not really playing guitar. I'm kind of in between, you know? And that's when ideas hit you. That's when you get some creative stuff will pop out. And if it's good enough, I'll play around with it for a little while, and then I'll record it. Then I'll send it to myself, and I have it. And this was one of those tunes.
Okay.
And I like the recurring motif in the B parts. It's real simple, but it's kind of funky, you know. And I knew that I was going to get Jacob Burleson to do it with me as a duet because I knew he could play great on it. But when it came to naming it, I was looking around the neighborhood. We just moved to Greenville, Tennessee last year. We built a house down here.
Okay.
And just over the hill, not far from Margaret Falls, there's a place called Old Forge. And we've been over there. There's the Old Forge National Recreation Area up in the mountains there. And I thought, that's a great name.
Yeah.
And it seemed to fit this thing. So.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna let you go, and I'm going to just thank you so much for coming on for the audience of Unreal Bluegrass with Guitar Melodies. And I'll remind them again, it's on Hedge Drive Records. They can find it, I assume, it, if they just look for you on any kind of a search on the Internet, they'll find you and they'll find access to it.
I would say the best way for me is to go to my website, which is timstaffordguitar.com, and they go to the store there, and it's in there. I have it for download and for CD.
Okay.
We still use those. And
okay.
Of course, it's also still on the streaming, all the streaming platforms.
Yeah, man, you got to do that. Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right, Tim. Hey, listen, I'll say goodbye to you. I play for the audience Old Forge from this great album we've been talking about, and I'll run into you somewhere down the road.
I hope so, Steve.
Thanks, Tim.
Have a good day,
you too, bud.